Hello, and thanks for joining us for another So Legal podcast. Today, I have the pleasure in inviting two friends of mine, Scott Allen and Keith Allen. They are related from St. James's Place. St. James's Place are financial advisors. You must have seen them on television and other places. And we're very happy to have them here today to speak about several things, 2020 political and market forecast, how they work with lawyers, the role of financial advisors, what the future holds for financial advice and obviously finance investment, and obviously a seminar that we're going to be coming up with and working with SJP on. So to start with, I'd like to introduce Keith Allen. Keith is a very experienced financial advisor who's been doing this a long time. I'm not calling you old. Come on, mate. People can tell from the photo that we're going to put out of this. Keith, I don't insult people in these podcasts. So
it's the grey hairs.
Well, we all get them, don't we? Well,
I've got some grey hairs.
You have, yeah. You like a shaved head, don't you, Scott?
To get rid of the grey hairs.
That's right. Good thinking. Right, so just to start with, I want to just introduce Keith. As I said, he's extremely experienced. He's been doing this a significant period of time. But Keith's history with finance isn't the only history that Keith's got. He's got an interesting and varied career. So I just want to ask Keith, you know, just to explain his career, SJP's history, how he got into finance, and then we'll move on to Scott.
Okay.
So Keith, over to you.
I started life as an engineer. Which started as hydroelectric, and then it moved into the oil and gas in the North Sea, installation of oil rigs and gas rigs, and that was phenomenally interesting. As an engineer, I'd like to suggest that I quite like to know how things work. And so when there was a lull in the oil and gas industry, my middle-age crisis period, where I was been doing that particular industry for a long time, and I was a little bit edgy about it, and I stepped sideways into something else that I quite like, which was money. And so joining a merchant bank, working in the City of London, had its appeals.
How did you get a job out of interest?
That is an interesting point, is that whilst working in the oil and gas industry, I was earning quite a lot of money, and that meant that I was looking to do things with it, and so I went as a hobby into investing. And then when I wanted to change direction, I looked at turning a hobby into a business, mainly because if you are interested in the subject, it's not really hard work.
That's true.
It's great fun. And if you are interested in knowing how things work, then I think you have an even bigger advantage. Because in today's world, it strikes me, a lot of people do a lot of talking without actually understanding how things really work. One of the things that I would illustrate that is that when I was a youngster, whether it was to get outside the house or not, my father used to spend ages fiddling around with his engine or his car. But you can't do that nowadays. Everything is electronic. And so fewer and fewer people actually know how to change a plug or do very practical things.
That's right.
And I'm very old school. I enjoy knowing how things work. I got trained into finance. I worked with a merchant bank for about 8 years. And then I was poached by Hill Samuel, went into this industry, and then that got taken over by another well-known company, which I wasn't so sure about. So I spent a couple of weeks there on an induction course, left, and joined St. James's Place, which in those days was J. Rothschild Assurance. And we were Rothschilds. Until we floated on the stock market, but we were not able to continue using the Rothschild name because of the family bank. The consequences of that, our president at that time was Jacob Rothschild, and he worked out of Spencer House in St. James's Place, in St. James's. And so rather than using the Rothschild name, we switched to St. James's Place.
Spencer House, wasn't that related to Princess Diana?
It is indeed. It was the original family house of the Spencers. And one day I'll take you and look around Spencer House. There is one room in there that is completely gold leafed.
Wow.
It is just phenomenal. Okay. It is the Spencer. Jacob took out a very long lease on it and spent a fortune renovating it. And he used to enjoy inviting Lady Spencer, Diana, there, etc. And then we changed it to St. James Place. Now, I will get the house rules out of the way because my compliance department will come down on me like a ton of bricks otherwise. I'm here and I should give you plenty of opinions and views.
Yes.
But you must remember they are my personal opinions and views. They're not corporate. Otherwise, I think house rules would get demolished straight away. And as a legal advisor, I might have to come and see you on a different aspect.
No, I can get that completely. No, that's absolutely fine. So, Frank, that's great. That's a good synopsis of your career and SJP history. Just introduce Scott now. Scott Allen is a good friend of mine. Scott, do you want to just give us a brief career history outline?
Very brief career history. I'm a local guy. Worked at Eastbourne Motoring Centre for the best part of a decade. Then moved into mortgages and protection right at the wrong time, 2008, when things fell off a cliff. So that was tough. Also had some involvement with the family business, industrial minerals, and then took my diploma level 4 exams for financial advising and stumbled across Keith. So I've been with him since last year.
When you say stumbled, you are related, so
that's
not
we
exactly
are, we
your,
are related.
It's Keith's a hell of a stumble, that, isn't it?
Keith's my second cousin, so my father's cousin, and I was doing my exams and I said to my dad, like, I quite like this. But I'm going for a standing start, no client base. Mm. What do I do? He said, go and talk to Keith. I said, who's Keith? And of course, I met Keith, you know, a couple of times in my life, but probably for a grand total of about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I went up to Keith to pick his brain, and you know, the timing was right. He was looking for someone, so here I am.
To be fair, 20 minutes with Keith is what
you
need.
It left a mark.
It leaves a mark. It's almost like a lifetime sometimes, which is fantastic. That's why we love him. Right, so, okay, that's fantastic. Thanks
so,
for that.
Just to tail off, I have been with St. James's Place, not quite since day one, but I'm now in my 26th year.
26th year. It's incredible.
So, almost married my...
Does Jacob Rothschild still own St. James's Place?
No, he was and still is sort of loosely connected as one of the presidents, but he's been usurped by his friend and long-time friend, Mark Weinberg.
Right.
Who's now our current president.
Okay, that's okay. So, and the ownership, it's a company in the stock exchange.
Well, the thing is that we floated in 97 on the market, and I enjoy this. I was on the golf course when I got the text, and given that we all had shares in it, it was fantastic. But we actually have been in a FTSE 100 company now for a number of years. We were the second fastest company from startup to become FTSE 100, which sometimes quite frightens me. It means we're quite large.
Yeah. that's
and we started much in the same way as yourself, as a small startup with experienced people.
We have no intention of being SJP and being on the FTSE. I can tell you that now. Probably comes with a lot of stresses.
I think we're about 72nd.
Wow.
The largest company in the country.
How many financial advisors across the UK affiliated with SJP?
It's something like 4,000.
4,000 of you? Wow.
Now, you have to take that on board as being a big chunk of this marketplace. The reason being is that if you went back to when I started this industry, there was something in excess of 100,000 financial advisors across the country. Now it's in the region of about 23,000, mainly because of all the rules and regulations and the qualifications one's had to jump through to be able to be designated, qualified. And the consequence is when we've got that level of number, our percentage of the marketplace is enormous.
That's do you know, that's incredibly it's incredibly different to the legal sector. Whereas it's so there's a statistic that in the 1980s, I think it's 1986, and I know this because it's the year we started in 2016, so it's 30 years. We went to a seminar, Jamie and I, and they said that in 1986 there were 15,000 registered solicitors on the roll of England, you know, on the roll. And the GDP contribution of law was 2%. So, it, you know, that's not bad. And then fast forward to 2016, there was 140 odd thousand solicitors registered.
Almost the reverse, isn't it?
And we still provided just under 2% of the GDP. So actually,
very diluted.
It's not just diluted, but you've also got a scenario where, personally, and this is you know my own opinion. For me, the law is fundamentally so important that you have people that are regulated, properly focused, properly trained. And what we've ended up with is an industry where you've got not only over 150,000 registered solicitors now, you've got law schools, privately funded private law schools, handing out LPCs, legal practice course qualifications, and pumping the market full of not particularly great candidates, increasing the number of solicitors every year. But then, in their infinite wisdom, the SRA and the Law Society decided that you can have licensed conveyances. People that have got a 1 year qualification in just doing conveyancing that can just do conveyancing. You've got unqualified people drafting wills. So I hazard a guess that the 150,000, and that's not saying that there isn't a role for licensed conveyances, because actually licensed conveyances, if they're only doing conveyancing, is fine. But you've probably got, I would hazard a guess, 300,000 people providing legal advice in the UK. You've gone from 100,000 financial advisors to 23,000, whereas we've gone from 15,000 to 300,000. We've multiplied by 20, but it's the share of the legal sector is still just under 2% of GDP.
Do you know why it's contracting?
Well, because you've made people have to qualify properly to
correct.
Do that role.
It's absolutely, because one thing that we're dealing with is people's money. There are so many instances where people get divorced from their money very quickly, okay, by bad advice.
Of course.
And strangely enough, and sadly enough, a lot of that bad advice has been through banks.
Of course.
High Street banks.
Of course. Well, that's why the banks can't provide financial advice anymore.
That's right. And what they do, and that's an interesting point, because people perceive that they are getting advice, but they're not. Because if you go on to a bank's website now, and younger people like your good self will happily do so, the first thing it does is it asks you which area you want to look at. And so you press that area. It gives you a selection of about five. You go on to that page, and it gives you another selection of five. And you go through it. And in the end, you've bought something which you think you've had advice. What you've done is you've pre-selected it yourself, and as a consequence, you can no longer sue the bank for bad advice because you've actually sold it to yourself. If they come to us, we can be sued. And because we're a big company, if you deal with an IFA, I have to tell you that if you go and complain, there's about a 60-40 chance that you won't win, because the compliance people and the regulator knows that most of those IFAs are almost men of sand, and that if they allocate, it won't get paid. Whereas if you complain about us, it's about 60-40 the other way, for the simple reason they know we've got deep pockets and won't pay out.
And so it's quicker.
The security is actually going with the bigger company, which is what the regulator wants. It wants a few big organisations rather than so many that it can't control.
But then the downside to that is that the big organisations and the people that own those big organisations are going to basically pocket a substantial amount of the market.
No, you say that. But the biggest problem is at present is that the more they bring in rules and regulations and red tape, trust me, it costs a fortune to run a back office.
Yes, I get that.
And therefore, who's going to pay for it? Now, what we're in competition at present is with platforms that are coming down to zero charges. Now, charging is a big subject, which we can go into later. But the point is, My belief is that if a company can't cover its costs and have a surplus as profit, then it won't stay in business for very long. And that's the risk and the fear of the regulator. If the company doesn't stay in business, who are you going to sue for your money?
I think our sector, the legal sector, is utterly the reverse. I mean, our regulator, the SRA, they make it that everybody knows they can complain about a solicitor. It's people's standing position is, even if you've done a tremendous job, they always find something to complain about, and they've just made it not just easy. It's almost like we are constantly in the firing line.
We are
a target, and you know we're in the visor.
Sometimes you've got a bullseye on your forehead.
And you know what? The SRA do nothing to protect us. Or you go on the SRA website, the first thing you see is how to sue your lawyer. How to sue your solicitor, you know, how to make a complaint about a solicitor. What the hell is that? You're supposed to be our regulator, you're supposed to be, or the law society, you know, you're supposed to be our kind of like a union. But I just think there's too many solicitors. It's interesting that you said what you said about financial advisors. I would personally like the legal sector to come down and have less people providing legal services.
More quality rather than quantity.
Exactly, yeah. And you know what? It might actually regulate the pricing structure, because at the moment we're a race to the bottom.
That's
same
crazy.
With you,
that's
we're a race
crazy.
To the bottom. How can you do, you're buying somebody's house or flat for them, how can you comfortably say that you can do that for a fee of £595 plus VAT, £595 plus VAT, to go through all the documents relating to a purchase of a house, all the documents relating to the title, the replies from the other side, reporting to the client, going through mortgage documents, dealing with the mortgage company, getting the monies in, it's a process that takes a lot of time and effort. And then you've got firms that are advertising 295 plus VAT in Manchester or up north. Well, I know things are cheaper, but these are conveyancing chop shops. And people still, and I'm amazed by this, okay? I'm having a bit of a moan here, aren't I? And people still, lovely tap on the shoulder. No, but people still look at you as if you're an unnecessary cog in the wheel to them buying their property. They will, listen, this is absolutely true, they will go and get a mechanic and pay for a mechanic's time to look over a car they're buying, right, for £5,000, right? But they'll buy a £500,000 house and wonder why they need to go to a solicitor. And then go and use someone, let's say they're buying in Brighton, mm-hmm. where we've got an office, they'll go and use someone in Manchester with no knowledge of the local area to buy the property because they're getting £100 off their conveyancing. I'll tell you what, this is the fundamental change that needs to happen in the legal sector is exactly what's happening.
But it's people don't want
quality
to pay,
over quantity.
People don't want to pay fees, and ultimately you get what you pay for.
Everyone wants something for nothing.
We're in a consumer age where, exactly, people want something for nothing.
But the problem is, Scott, with that, people, you know, we are, for the most part, most law firms are, and this is the difference between your sector and our sector, we're transactional. So we will have a one-off transaction. People never wake up in the morning and go, must contact my lawyer today about my investments. Because it's never going to happen. But people wake up and go, buying a house, need to get a lawyer because I've been told I need to get a lawyer. Oh, for God's sake. Right? But they never wake up and go, I need to get... We have quite a good number of repeat clients because they respect and value what we do.
Yeah.
And we always do a good service. We're a very good firm. I'm not just saying that. We've got amazing staff here, we've got amazing people that we love dearly, and they do a fantastic job, but we don't have, ours is transactional, it's a one-off. So what you do is you get, I could go on for hours about this, you get people
you're
just
rich.
Literally going just on the basis of price. So how hard is it for us to prove to people, use us, because we get, because all they're looking for is the bottom line. They look at us like plumber A, plumber B, plumber C. Why is plumber A charging me 500, plumber B 1,000, plumber C 2,000? Because all they're doing is fixing the same pipe. Surely it's the same job.
Yep.
But it's not. But anyway, we'll move on.
Can I just sort of try to summarise on that? The basic difference is you just touched on is that you're transactional. So people come and see you as and when they have one item requirement, often. Okay?
Yeah.
And when they come to do with us, we used to be called investment, financial advisor. Now we're called wealth management. Because what we're trying to do is to cover the whole spectrum. Now, what my big fortune in life is that I'm a little bit older. What that means is I've been doing this for a long time. It means that I don't actually have to go out and find business.
Mm.
What I've got is I've got a large client bank. And that client bank have been with me for many years, like some of my clients for 30 years. Now, if you do a good job, that it's amazing that they refer their children, their brothers, their sisters.
Yes.
I've got such wide family connections that what that's developed, and it's so out of fashion at present, and we're scared of it, it's called trust.
Yeah.
It's in such a short demand at present, is trust. Everybody's more interested in cost. They
that's
don't
true.
Realise who they can trust.
Well, we're in a flux in the legal sector, because it's not only that, it's also the tech is changing rapidly. The technology is changing things. The younger generation coming through want email, they want accessibility to their file online, they want ease. They don't actually, do you know what? It's human avoidance software. It's
absolutely
the biggest growth area for the legal sector. People, because of social media, because they're always on their phone, they can't do what we're doing now, is having a chat.
No.
They can't. They genuinely
no,
can't talk to people.
Conversation.
They have.
And I've got some interesting insights, but
move on. We'll move on anyway. Yeah, laws screwed. So that's the basis of that. So right, I'm going to ask you guys just to tell me, what do you think is the biggest market forecast and political forecast for 2020? Because the what's happening already, and we're on what's the date today?
8th.
My watch says 9th. That's good. My
You're
phone says
8th.
There he is. There you go. Good one, boys. Yeah. So it's the 8th today, amazingly, and the world already seems like it's burning.
Yep.
Australia's on fire.
And California?
California as well. I read yesterday that when the Amazon fires in 2008 happened, 2.3 million acres of rainforest and land were affected. Australia is already at 20 million acres.
Well, one interesting fact, that only a few weeks ago, a very large convention on the climate control broke up without real agreement, and the reason it broke up is that there were two countries that refused to sign off.
Let me guess: Sudan and Trump. Sorry, America. United States must have been one.
And the second?
Australia.
Yeah.
No way.
Absolutely. No, two countries that should be more aware of what's going
Unbelievable.
On.
Unbelievable. No, I love Australia. It's fantastic.
So,
I've got
there are lots
there.
Of people who will stick their head in the sand.
Yeah, it's just such a sad world we're living in at the moment. I mean, the world is literally on fire. I mean, I do think about this stuff.
So
I think
as a species,
I think we're done on the planet, to be honest with you. I don't want to be a doom gloom.
Yeah, I can get any more doom. But
yeah.
If you say, what's the burning issues?
Boom-boom-tsh.
Everybody that I know that is half intelligent should be sitting down right now on the next few days, trying to work out what the future holds.
I'm just going to have a little break now with the podcast coming back for part two with Keith and Scott. Hello, you lovely people. Just to note that this is a podcast and does not constitute legal advice. Should you require any specific legal advice based on anything, then please contact your solicitor, or even better, us, and we can advise you fully.